Let me tell you a story. About a year and a half ago, Lisa and I made our way up to Alexandria, Virginia to visit my wonderful daughters, our daughters' home and their family. And about the middle of the week, of course, on Wednesday, we went to church with them with the Bible study, and we got in their car. They had gotten a new ride, something we're always happy to see, because a lot of times we get to buy their old ride, which is a pretty big step up. But this was a nice ride. It was one of these new, I think it was a Honda Pilot or something. We got in, and because I've got long legs, they let me get in the front passenger seat, of course. And so I get all buckled in, and we ease out onto the side street and head out toward where they go to church at Annandale. And just in a little bit, I heard something. Ding, ding. And I thought, I'm hearing things. A lot of things I can't hear at this stage in my life, but I thought I had heard it. And then in a little bit, I heard again. Ding, ding. So, you know, I began to look around, make sure that my seatbelt was on, Wade's seatbelt was on. And I tell you what, brethren, we hadn't gone too much further, and I heard, what do you think? Ding, ding. So I, being a curious type guy, looked over at Wade, and I said, Wade, you know your car's dinging, don't you? Are we almost out of gas or something? He said, no. He said, that's just a little device on this thing. And I said, well, what's it doing? He said, it's a lane departure device. He said, this thing's got some cameras on it. And he says, if you start to ease out of your lane and you don't have a turn signal on, it wants you to know that you're getting out of your lane. And it does that. I said, really? He said, yeah. And I'll tell you what, we hadn't gone but about four or five more blocks, and what do you think? Yeah, ding, ding. Now, being a Christian man, I really tried not to smirk, because I'm thinking, I look over at Wade. He's a very smart young man. I mean, I've known him since he was 5 years old. He's got a law degree from Harvard. Very intelligent, very wonderful. He married our daughter, so that's enough to tell you he's very smart, right? And I thought, you know, he's got all these qualities, but he obviously can't drive as good as his old father-in-law. Listen to that thing. And before we got to church, what do you think? Ding, ding! I didn't say anything to him. I just thought to myself, you need to watch me drive more often. Okay, so now fast forward a few months. And I, in those months, continued to drive as excellently as I do. Just ask my wife. That wasn't meant to be funny. And something happened. You know, we had to get the car worked on, and it was a major deal. And so the dealership loaned us a car. You see where this is going, don't you? I hadn't got near good off the lot. Hadn't got to the first stoplight. Ding, ding. I checked my seat belt, and then I remembered it all come back to me, and I thought, no, surely not. They don't put that sort of thing on loaner cars. Ding, ding. I said, really? And so I began to pay a little closer attention. I'll tell you, I hadn't gotten a quarter of a mile. Ding, ding. And then I thought, it is time to stop, get the owner's manual, and find out how to turn that thing off. I mean, it was driving me crazy. It was obviously oversensitive and not doing the job it was intended to do. That got my curiosity up even more, so I started studying this just a little bit. And I'll just tell you what, if you Google this up, let me tell you what's happening on the new cars. Now, this is amazing. Do you know how many people die every year in automotive accidents in the world? The most recent statistics that I was able to find says about 1.2 million people die in automotive accidents every year. That works out to about one every 25 seconds. I'm not talking about being injured. I'm talking about dying in an automotive accident worldwide, about one every 25 seconds. And I don't know what percentage of those people have gotten out of their lane, but I will tell you, I bet it's a sizable number. And so what the automotive industry did is they said, this is a problem, and what we're going to do to help you is put these onboard cameras out to the side and on primary, secondary roads that have striping. Those cameras will sense where the lane is. And if you ease over too close to the edge of that lane, guess what happens? Ding, ding. And it tells you that you're getting it. And if it crosses a yellow line, it goes gong, gong. Yeah. If you have a turn signal on, it tells it to lighten up. And it doesn't do that to you. But you see, if you have a turn signal on, it means you're going to turn and you're paying attention. And then I got to studying this a little bit more. And let me tell you what. This lane departure warning system has really gotten sophisticated. It will tell you not only with a ding, but now this just sounds too weird to be true, but it is true. If you get off on the right-hand side a little bit too much, you know what it does? The car will vibrate on that side. Just like that rumble strip that's over there. I know you've never hit the rumble strip, brother, but that, don't point it, Rhonda. And if you get off in your lane off on the left-hand side, if you want it to, it will rumble and vibrate the car on the left-hand side. It's amazing. And they'll have a little, that you can have a light flashing. And I think next year they're coming out with one that has a mechanical elbow about the size of your spouse's that will hit you right here. All right, I just made that part up. But it can't be very far behind. I mean, it will beep at you. It will rumble. It will, in fact, now they're making them that if you start to get out of your lane, it will actually torque the wheel and make you want, you have to force it to get out of the lane. Is that pretty incredible? This thing's got cameras all over it. It will give you speeding alerts. They make them now that will read speed signs as you're going down the freeway. It will optically tell the carburetor, no, you're going too fast. It has driver fatigue alarms, reminder lights, stop and go. And I'm sure you've seen the commercials about braking. They actually have them now that when the thing is activated, if you're not paying attention and you get up too close to someone, the brakes automatically come on. Now, before you get too carried away with the wonderful technology, let me say that same technology is also loading cars up with things to distract you. Everything from little TV screens to stereo to you name it. If you're not careful, they actually go counter to the thing by giving you too many things to take your mind off of what should be happening. So, what's that got to do with church? Well, you're pretty smart, so I bet you see where this is going. It turns out this has a lot to do, and it is exactly what I want to talk with you about this morning. I don't know who did this woodcut engraving. I looked and looked. I sent it to Randy Smith so he could put it on the study sheet for the young people here. I wish I could tell you, but here's the problem. When you Google up an image and you fail to catch the artist's name at the first time, you can't hardly go back and re-Google it, that image anyway, and find out who did that woodcut. But isn't that just amazing? Do you see what that artist did in just a black and white two-dimensional drawing? They captured Matthew, the 7th chapter, verses 13, 14. And as I know many of you would still probably use the King James, this first time I'm going to put it in the King James English. It says, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, narrow is the way which leadeth unto life." And those last few words are the ones that just scare you. "Few there be that find it." Well, as always happens, when you go to studying a passage like that, you find things that you didn't know were there. Let me tell you what happens if you chop her up to about 1,000 feet above this and look down and put this passage, in fact, the next few passages, in context. First of all, I'll tell you a way you can always remember where this passage is found. It comes immediately on the heels of Jesus giving the golden rule. I know you all know what the golden rule is. Well, that's significant because, you see, the last part of the seventh chapter of Matthew is the winding down, or the winding up, of what we call the Sermon on the Mount. Now, I don't want to discombobulate you with what I'm about to say, but let me just say, when I was growing up, I took the context of the Sermon on the Mount that it had to be exactly word for word, that's all the words, no other words, no different words. Jesus went up, and that was the Sermon on the Mount. I'm not so sure about that anymore. That it may be. I mean, it's fine. That might be. However, I'm also at peace with the idea that that opening list of teachings, those were the salient things Jesus talked about. Those were His stuff. Because if you go over in Luke, you find those same pieces are kind of scattered out through the teachings of Luke. So it could be that the Sermon on the Mount forms an umbrella for these salient teachings of Jesus. Because let's face it, they are inspired words, but there's not necessarily a straight connect line between all those dots. He's all over. He covers a lot of subjects. But when he gets to the end, let me tell you what the science of speaking is. The science of speaking is, in persuasiveness, you want to end by giving people a choice and bringing them to a decision. And it's marvelous to see what happens in those few verses. Have you ever noticed that there's four types of choices that he goes over? And when you look at them, he says, let me tell you what, folks, there's two kinds of gates and there's two kinds of paths. One after each one of those gates. And then he gets to talking about people who have already made it through the gate, I think. And he's saying, and let me tell you, when it comes to prophets, he said they're like fruit trees. There's two kinds of prophets out there. And then he says, but disciples are like that too. He says, there are two kinds of disciples. And he's going to show you in just a moment how to delineate. And then he ends up saying, and there's two kinds of foundations. I was reading last night that around the Sea of Galilee, there's a lot of sand, and it gets packed really hard, and it's deceptively hard. If you go to build a house, you think you can build on it, but only the smart people knew that under the right conditions, that sand would liquefy and blow away, and you had to dig down to get the foundation. He said there's two kinds of foundations. And so then Jesus gives a voice to the choice. He says when it comes to those gates, he says there's a wide and easy, but there's a narrow and difficult. Now, I want to just make a little side point real quick and tell you, this is also interesting because he actually starts this with the two gates and he says, enter in at the straight gate. And then he says, for broad is the gate, wide is the gate, broad is the way to destruction. That's good psychology. Psychological people who study the workplace say, when you are teaching someone or telling someone, tell them the thing to do, not the thing not to do. And tell the thing to do first. And that's exactly what Jesus says. Did you see that? He says, he tells you first what to do. Enter in at the straight gate. Because, and then he tells you what not to do. And I've been told that if you're taking a big pitcher of milk out of the refrigerator, if you've had problems spilling the milk before, what you should not do is say, don't spill the milk, don't spill the milk, don't spill the milk. What you should do, because you have a tendency to act out what you visualize in your head, is hold it firm, hold it steady, hold it firm, hold it steady. And so that's what Jesus does. He says, enter at the straight gate. And then he tells you about the bad gate. And then when he gets to the thing about prophets, he says, they're like trees. He says, but you can tell the difference. By their fruits shall you know them. And then he gets to talking about disciples, and he says, many of them will say, hey, I've done this in your name and this in your name. And he says, but you'll know the ones that really are my disciples because they do the will of the Father. And so you see, he gives you the delineation. And then finally he says, between the shifty sand and the rock, the solid rock, he says, you need to be this person. So isn't that brilliant? The end of the Sermon on the Mount ends with four sets of choices. And I think, in my mind, the last three sets of choices really are subservient to the first choice, and that is, enter the straight gate, for broad is the way that leads to destruction. So, here it goes. And some of you know exactly where this lyric comes from. This is a famous country western song. I think it made it up to number 30 on the top charts. You know who sung this, don't you? George Jones sung this song. Listen to what he says. I've had choices since the day that I was born. There were voices that told me right from wrong. If I had listened, no, I wouldn't be here today, living and dying with the choices I've made. Now, this is very poignant. I think it was a guy named Billy Yates who wrote most of the lyrics, but it came right out of George Jones's life. Listen to the next stanza. I was tempted at an early age, I found. I liked drinking, and I never turned it down. There were loved ones, but I turned them all away. Now, how many times has that happened? There's the voices. You see the choices, and there's the voices. People who loved and said, listen, that's going to lead you to the wrong way. Now I'm living and dying with the choices I've made. One more stanza I think you need to hear, because, it says something powerful. I guess I'm paying for the things I have done. If I could go back, Lord knows I'd run. Isn't that powerful? But I'm still losing this game of life I play, losing and dying with the choices I've made. I'm not proud. I just think there's a lot of truth in that. What is it, Bill, they say country music is three chords and the truth. Yeah, and you know more than three chords, so you probably know more truth than the average singer. But I want you now to focus in. We're going to come back from 10,000, 9,000, 1,000, down to one part of this ending of the Sermon on the Mount, verses 13 and 14. And I'll put them up there, and I want you to reflect. And again, see how Jesus starts it, because this is the start of the choices. And he says, now, here's another thing. I missed this for most of my life, Will. I just missed this. He says, you don't get on the path till you go through the gate. I would just kind of suspect there's folks even here in the sound of my voice who are pretty sure they're on the path that's never gone through the gate. And he says, it's a narrow gate. Jesus was so audacious as to say, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And there are people who fool themselves every day about that. And he says, but narrow is the gate, difficult is the way. But you see, the way doesn't come until after you go through the gate, which leads to life. Now, there's the scariest passage in that passage. And there are few who find it. You know, up there on the other road, and you see the drawing up there. By the way, I hope you want to get a copy of that drawing. At the end of this lesson, some of the elders or deacons or some of the men will be at the door, and there's another one of these laminated card things, and it's got that wood cutting of that drawing and this passage on the back, plus another quote that I'll get to in just a moment. So, go back to the first story I told you. Remember what I said after I got in that car, and it kept dinging and dinging, and what did I say I wanted to do? Pull over and get the owner's manual, right? How do you turn this stupid thing off? I'm a good driver. Ask Elisa. Don't ask Elisa. And then I had to reflect about that just a little bit, because it becomes very, very clear. Now, I want to tell you, not just suggest, I'm going to tell you, my job is to tell you a few things, whether you accept them or not. I hope you will if you find them in the Word. Here's how you pretend that you're doing fine. Ease over and turn off the lane departure warning system. Just turn it off. And people do it all the time spiritually. Let me give you three steps to turning off the lane departure warning system. Here's how you do it. Number one, don't attend church services. I've met a number of people. I've had people. I got dressed down in a seminar I was teaching over in Jacksonville, Florida, to a bunch of U.S. Forest Service people, and it was about courage. And I gave a whole bunch of examples about courage, and but one of them was William Tinsdale, the guy who basically wound up being, I think, drawn and quartered and burned at the stake because he dared to translate out of the Latin and the Greek the first printed, not handwritten, Wycliffe did that, but the first that went to print the Bible in English. And I said, that was a pretty brave thing. He paid a big cost for it. And I got dressed down by a lady who I happen to know who gave me this evaluation. She said, well, I consider myself a spiritual person, but that's crossing the line to use an example about a Bible. Guilty. I don't mind that. Well, let me just say, if you don't want to hear things that are going to go ding, ding in your life, you just stop going to church. Probably all of us have felt the urge at times not to go to church. Because let me tell you what happens. If you go to assembly like this, if you sit in a class like I did this morning, and Gene Barley, taught an excellent class. Gene, who's known in my family as Old Watch's name. We'll never forget Gene's name. Gene, and listen to the class, you can't help but absorb some things that's going to keep you in the lane. And I know the people teaching these other classes and the wonderful women who teach these young people, and if you bring your children, and God bless you for doing that, into these Sunday school classes, they're going to hear things they need to hear, and it's going to make them think, ding, ding. But if you don't want the ding, ding, just cut back on church. Tell you another thing you need to do. You need to cut back on having Christian friends. If you want to get the dings out of your life, stop going to Christians' homes or having Christians in your home. Because if you love Christians and you're around them a lot, I will promise you, you will look at them and you'll say, whoo, you know, I want to be more like Sue and Elmo. I want to be more like Will and Carla. I want to be more like those people. And then you think, ding, ding, wait, you're out of your lane, Randy. And so, if I don't want to have those feelings, just stop going into Christians' homes and having Christians in your home. And then finally, I'll just give you three. If you want to turn off the lane departure system, stop reading your Bible. Just kind of, I remember being in a Bible class years ago and hearing a young lady say, do we really have to read a whole chapter? Can't we just read a verse and talk about it? And I tell you this, it makes my heart quiver. I said, no, we really need to read the whole thing. And I think that was her last Sunday to attend. I wrote her a note. I begged her mother. She wouldn't come back. Guilty. Read your Bible. But if you don't want to hear dinging going off in your head, then when you think I need to read where I should be this morning, today, in the Bible, just leave that off. And that is pretty effective to turning off the lane departure warning system. Now, on the other hand, if you want to preserve your life and mine, because you see, this is corporate Christianity here. God knew what He was doing when He said, I want you to worship Me individually and I want you to worship Me corporately. When you come together, what you get is a different thing. If you want to turn on the lane departure thing, come to the assembly. Come to the assembly. Come and worship. Even when you don't feel like it, come and sing. Come and pray. Listen to the prayers. And it will permeate over time. Come to the assembly. If you want to turn it on, go into Christians' homes and invite them into your homes. And when you go out, be with Christians. And then finally, don't just read the passages some people tell you to read. Read all of it, because there's some things in there that will trouble you. And they should. Christianity is like farming. It's not just putting in the seeds, it's pulling up the weeds. And when you come to church, when you read your Bible, when you got Christian friends, you are putting in seed, but you're pulling up weeds. Now, I think I'm going to tell you one more story. And this is true. And I'm not going to tell you the names or too much about the circumstances, but I know of a situation where a family, church-going people, not of our belief pattern precisely, but church-going people. This man was an official, so to speak, in their church. And to condense the story, he got a chance to leave and have a better job. And so they left. They sold their house. They sold their land. Got two teenage children and went off to not a far country, but a state way up north. And there was a big to-do and a going-away party. And in less than 6 months, word sadly came back that he left her. He was in the process of leaving her. Oh, he'd gotten himself in good shape. He'd lost about 100 pounds. I'm not making that up. And he was got a good paying job. He was ready to start a new life. And let me tell you what, when guys get the idea they're going to start a new life, sometimes they get the idea that maybe they need a new wife. Although there's no direct evidence that that's the case right yet. But it sure is the evidence that his not-so-old wife now is raising two young people. Now, you see what he did? This is perhaps unfair. You can call me unfair if you want. I think he turned off the lane departure warning system first. He left his spiritual support family and went to a different place where they didn't have that. And he took his family away from that. And I can't say this for absolute certain, but I suspect, since the fact that people in his church back here have been calling him and he won't take the calls, I don't think he's going to church anywhere. And I suspect he's probably not reading the Bible. What did he do? He turned off the lane departure warning system. And now, brokenheartedly, she's coming back with two teenage children and trying to put her life back together. Now, you see, it's not just what he got out of that deal. It's how much it's costing everybody else. When we, as a community, fail, it's not just us. The reverberations affect all of us. So, I end this with another quote. C.S. Lewis, possibly, well, in my opinion, one of the absolute top, what they call Christian apologists of the last century, wrote many things, but this book particularly had an impact on my life. I first heard about it when I was in college, and a Christian friend of mine said, "Hey, you need to read this book, Frazier. It'll make you feel like you know all of Satan's tricks." The name of the book's a strange name. It's called The Screwtape Letters, and it's just one half of the correspondence. It's a work of fiction, but it will be eerie if you read it, because it's the letters written from a senior tempter to a junior tempter. It kind of takes the position that if you have guardian angels looking after you, Satan's got his recruits working on you too. And so here's this senior devil, not the devil, but a senior demon in hell writing letters to a junior tempter. And you only get half the correspondence. You only get the letters that Screwtape, that's his name, writes to Wormwood, that's the junior tempter. And it's frightening. It takes place about the time of World War II. And toward the end of one of the letters, Screwtape writes this advice. Sears in my mind. "Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one. The gentle slope. Soft underfoot. Without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts." You see, that's the broad way, that's the wide gate. and it's not marked with any problems, and everybody turns off their lane departure warning system, and we're just cruising around. You ever wonder why they talk about a stairway to heaven and a highway to hell? Because there's a lot more traffic on a highway. That's what Jesus said. There's a lot more traffic on a highway. You've got to have a lane departure warning system. And Screwtape says, let me tell you, all you got to do is keep them from hearing the voices that talk about the choices. Your affectionate Uncle Screwtape. One last slide. You see, if you make a turn and you don't want to hear the ding, it's because you've got a turn signal on. Remember that? Here's the irony. You've got to hit the exit ramp. You got to hit the exit ramp to get through the right gate, and you don't get on the path until you go through the right gate. Isn't that amazing? I wonder sometimes, what are people waiting for? I know people who like a good deal. So what kind of deal are you waiting on? Is it a matter of something internal that says, no, I won't submit. I refuse to die in this life so that I can have another life. Because Jesus said you had to do that. He said, you're buried with Him into baptism, like into Jesus' death, that you may rise and walk in newness of life. I read something last night that chilled me to the bone. It said, I was studying weeping. And suddenly it leapt off the page that at the great white throne of judgment, I think there will be possibly a cacophony of weeping. Jesus said there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth when we see the sons of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob come into the kingdom, and we ourselves are left out. Those who were meant were left out. And so I think it's quite possible that there are people today, perhaps even here, who in that instant will remember this morning. Remember when the Spirit was alive in your heart. Remember when it was saying, I need to get through the gate before I can get on the path. I need to do that. Don't let it be one moment of weeping. Listen to what Jesus said. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Will you accept Him? Take the exit. Come to Jesus. We encourage you. We plead with you to do so today while we stand and sing.